Sheets. I am Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am Sofa King.
Faster.
I am Sofa King.
No, not so fast. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King.
You say funny thing.
So we are the Sofa King podcast, and we are recording live, but you won't hear it live.
Most of the time you record, it's live, I think, right?
Usually.
The recording is live.
The recording is always live. Yeah. We don't fake anything.
Recorded live.
It is recorded live. If I didn't mention, we are recording live here in the Fight Club studios.
Yes.
And we are talking today about simulation theory and parallel universes. Sometimes, I guess they're two different things.
Yeah.
They're two different theories that are kind of based off of the same quantum mechanics, I guess you could say.
There can be parallel universes in the simulation theory.
Yes. Yeah. So the simulation theory is the newer theory, I believe, over the parallel universe theory.
I think so.
It's kind of newer thinking.
Yep.
What do we have today?
For those that don't know what the simulation theory is, a lot of people use
technically
simulation argument
or hypothesis.
I knew you were going to do that.
Or
because it's technically not a theory. A theory is a more proven scientific principle. This is just a hypothesis or philosophical argument,
which goes into my thing. It is considered a religion in some senses. Simulation
argument.
Yeah, simulation
religion. I'll have to be honest. Like, if I have a original religion, that's it. Like, right now, that's how I'm feeling about it.
Well, if you think about religion, it's based on faith, right? You there is no proving it. There is no, like, everything is circular. So it's, the Bible is true. Well, why is it true? Because God said so. You know, like, it's one of those things that everything rounds back to itself. Simulation theory is no different. You cannot prove it.
It is just as arguable as any religion, any theory or argument out there.
And the thing is that there are technically, if we are a simulation theory type environment that we live in, there is a God. It is another being that's controlling. So
I find comfort in it, honestly. Like a lot of people know, like, we've talked about religious beliefs before, and I have problems with, like, death. Like, I have anxiety thinking about it because I'm not religious and I don't have comfort in death. I think, like, that's it. Game over. Worm food. Because I don't find some of the religious principles believable. They seem too far stretched. But the thing is, with that simulation theory, it puts technology into it and gives me, like, a concept that I can wrap my head around, because it seems
you can
more
grasp
like
it. Yeah. It is very, very hard to believe. It's hard to think about, but it is logical. I mean, there is a basis based on quantum physics for how it can work.
Because it makes it finite. And
let's break it down, though.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't know exactly what the theory is.
So the simulation argument. It became most popular from, I think he's a physicist, is Nick Bostrom.
Philosopher.
Yes. Oh, yeah, he is a philosopher. And he had a simulation argument. And basically, he proved that it was way more likely than not likely that we're living in a virtualized simulation. I don't know if you have the actual three rules of the argument.
I do have the three rules. He wrote a paper in 2003. He's a philosopher. He's a pretty legit philosopher. He's the co-founder of the World Transhumanist Association. He writes about superintelligence.
I actually have the audio book. AI. Yeah, superintelligence. I'm on chapter 22.
Yeah, but you're still on page 60.
Because he fed it to my ears. Okay. I'm listening to it. That's why.
Okay, Hans Moravec was the first person to actually publish the simulation argument.
Okay, yeah. And then I think Nick Bostrom popularized it more.
Right.
And Nick Bostrom, he has three parts to his argument, and the paper is harder to read. It's an academic paper, but I listened to an interview that a group through Vice did with him, and when he broke it down in the interview, it was much easier to understand these three concepts. But he said that there are three propositions, and one of these is likely to be true, but not more than one of these.
Right.
So the first possibility of reality is that our entire reality, what we define as reality, is a computer simulation being run by someone or something else. And his embedded argument is that it's probably a super intelligent computer, because nothing else would be smart enough to run this simulation.
Right.
So our entire reality is a virtual reality and a simulation, which would mean that every single one of us is a simulation, a very sophisticated program yeah. that is being played out in the overall of situation. So that's possibility number one. Possibility number two is that there's a convergence in all highly advanced civilizations, more advanced than us, what he often calls civilizations that have reached technological maturity, which we ourselves have not yet. So super advanced, high-tech civilizations, all such civilizations decide for some reason that they don't want to run a simulation. So either we're a simulation, or civilizations that become good enough to create a civilization all sort of universally decide they don't want to do it.
They lose interest.
They lose interest. Yeah. They have some other moral obligation, whatever. So
we're just stuck
so
here.
So those are the first two options.
Which isn't very likely, I don't think. I think that if you have that technology, you would absolutely run a virtualization because it requires less resources.
Well, I think it would also depend on how quickly the technology develops. You might be like, if we ran a simulation, we could figure this out. Oh, shit, we just figured out better stuff. Fuck the simulation. This is better.
I don't know. If you want to create a universe, though, you don't want to make Jupiter. You don't want to have the mass and the actual, like, you know, you don't want to actually make a physical Jupiter.
No, that's true. But yeah. Again, he's saying we're talking about super advanced civilizations, super intelligent.
Something computers. That we might, yeah. It might be a word.
It would be hard for us, right. But for a super
for
advanced
someone
civilization,
else, they might be like, yeah, not so interested.
Might be anything.
And then the third option is that all civilizations that becomes technologically mature that are interested in creating a simulation go extinct. Probably due to their own fuck ups.
Right.
So option one is we, mathematically speaking, he says, we would be a simulation, because if there is a reality and societies become super advanced, statistically speaking, mathematically speaking, we stand a better chance of being a simulation than we stand of being in the one true reality that is running simulations, because that reality would be potentially running millions
everything.
Of simulations
yeah.
and the simulations could be running simulations.
Exactly.
So
it would
and rabbit hole
it'd be
really fucking
trillions
deep.
Upon trillions upon
right.
whatever
so
the number
statistically
is.
Statistically
like
speaking,
number.
If we are in a reality, we're probably not in the original one
yeah.
if there is simulation theory. But then option two is the people that become, the beings that become sophisticated enough to run simulations, what he calls ancestor simulations, lose interest. And then option three is, which is also one of the answers to the Fermi paradox of why don't we see space aliens if they're out there, which is everybody just extinguishes themselves with nuclear bombs and biological threats and fuck ups and we all kill ourselves. So those are the three things. And then the consensus being that super intelligent computers or beings would create what he calls an ancestor simulation, which is just a pure simulation running physics, running intentions, running emotions, running time, running everything that we perceive as a universe. It's just a very sophisticated simulation.
And so one of the things I asked myself in doing this is because I'm a very logical person. I think about things. I try and think logically. I don't believe in me and Brent call it the Santa Claus theory of religion and God, you know, and I think we've talked about that on another show,
yeah.
of how, you know, Santa Claus keeps the kids in line, you know, and he was created to do that. And God, religion was created to do the same thing. In fact, so I'm very logical thinking. I started out at a base point of what is our reality? If all these things, you know, we talked about when we started this talk about this show to bring it together. Brent's thing was Minecraft, how it can generate a place right in front of you.
Yeah, you know, current, it can make it and you perceive it at the same time. It's like Inception.
Right. It just, you look a certain way and then it just generates what's there for you.
Right.
And I said, okay, and that's really, really hard to believe. It's hard to wrap your mind around that's happening right now. How do those things stay there? You know, so once you see those things, they're kind of always there because you expect them to be there. And I looked into it deeper and it really goes into, and I mentioned it earlier, is quantum mechanics. And that was created by Einstein, who actually started figuring out that waves and particles, a light wave is just a bunch of particles, right? Atoms, right. Atoms are these things that we can't see, and they're pretty much 90% nothing. Like they're not made up of anything. So we're not made up of anything. And these are all scientific studies that are proven, that science follows. And the interesting thing that I found, and this goes into parallel universes / simulation theory because it kind of leads into it. But there was a few people involved in basing off of Einstein's works of quantum mechanics. Waves can be particles, and particles are waves back and forth. But the particles can be in multiple places all at one time.
And the trippy part is, and this is the part that completely brain fucks me. Like this is the thing I cannot get my brain around, is that through quantum physics, when you look at quantum mechanics, things don't act like they do in the non-quantum world, in the macro world.
Yeah, it's a totally different thing, yeah.
But when you're talking about this idea, and this is what Schrodinger talked about, the idea of Schrodinger's cat, all this different stuff, it's not that – it's when you take light, it is – we think it's either a particle or a wave. It's either one. And as soon as you observe it –
it's both.
It becomes permanently only one.
Yeah.
But it was always both and never either simultaneously.
Yeah.
And only the act of observing it makes it become one or the other.
Yeah.
And there are regular quantum repeatable experiments where only the act of conscious observation makes something define itself as one thing or another thing. And the thing that I can't get my brain around is that it wasn't either or, it's both and we don't deal with both very well.
No, because we just see what we see and that's that. And so Hugh Everett was actually one of the ones who kind of brung that into light and started observing things and wrote something called his paper was called Many Worlds. And in that paper, that's what he describes, is how once we observe the object, it becomes the object.
Right.
And that's like something that it's crazy to wrap your mind around, you know, because we have different senses and we have, you know, our sense of smell, our sense of touch, all these things, vision. And the way that really kind of started freaking me out when I started looking into this more was that the way that they perceive vision, it's basically a light reflection, right? That goes in, that our brain reads and basically tells us that, oh, that's that shape, right? Well, our brain is processing something. It's not processing an actual physical thing. It's just processing what we're seeing. Anything can be fed into our mind to read whatever it may be.
Right.
It's a weird, like...
I think it's not so hard. This is the thing that I came to. So like I thought about it, like, I'm going to step back a second, but like there's something called materialism. There's something called idealism.
Yes.
And it's like Democritus and Plato. And Plato thought that, you know, everything was based off like your thought process. Basically what you're describing is like the way that we interpret the data is the most meaningful thing, where Democritus was like, no, everything in the world is made of atoms and nothing really exists other than atoms.
Yes.
Atoms make the thing. And so that's been the argument for 2,500
yes.
years. And so the other thing you were talking about is actually based off the double slit experiment about waves and particles.
Yes.
And it's the way that they try to prove quantum entanglement. And I think that if you, the first thing to think about for me that helped me, now I'm not saying I understand quantum mechanics.
No, I don't think no any one of understands us are quantum mechanics. Yeah.
But I was having a really hard time with it until I just accepted, materialism, not being the thing.
Yeah.
That non-locality, meaning that objects are not necessarily anywhere at any time, mm-hmm. and thinking about programming environments and video games made it better for me to think about that. So the first thing that I thought about for myself to think like, is this even a possibility? And for me, the first thing I came up with was a dream. So like when you have a dream, like your computer, your brain is a computer. If you had a dream last night, some dreams are so real. You know, it's like Inception. Like the dream is so real. You wake up scared. You wake up mad at your friend. You thought you got a car wreck. Your kid fell off a cliff. It seemed real. So we know, and that didn't happen at all. You weren't there. You didn't touch it. You weren't in
your mind can create that.
Your mind can create and perceive at the same time. And that's a line from Inception again. But in the same time, it can generate and perceive it at the same time.
Yeah.
We already have a computer capable of creating a virtualized environment that fools us into thinking that there is no difference between the real world and that. And like a dream world.
See, and like that's the thing where dream studies come in where, you know, people say that, oh, you have a dream and it's just going to, you know, you look to the left in your dream and it's going to fill in whatever the fastest thing your mind can put there, which might be, it's going to generate some, like you might see people in a store and you don't take their faces on in your memory, but your brain does.
And the other thing that might be happening in your dream is you have the advantage of time perception. It can mess with it. So maybe it's able to. It might have taken longer than real time would have detected, but you won't actually perceive it as such. So if it took a little bit longer to process to make something to your left, you wouldn't know it because you're in a dream and it's in control of all the variables.
Yeah. Well, it's just like you have a dream. Yeah, you have a dream that like say you woke up at 2 a.m. and then went back to sleep and woke up back at 3, but you had like this day-long dream.
Yeah, there's a temporal displacement.
Yeah,
much more time can pass because of like the time dilation of the effect of your dream. So once I realized that, I was like, okay, so it's possible. We do it every night when we go to sleep.
The other thing about dreams, and this is a strange example, but it also kind of tells you that we kind of can't trust the reality that we're presented with, is I remember this very vividly because every so often I'll have a dream where I'm listening to music and it's a song that doesn't exist. And I wake up and I don't remember the song, but I remember thinking that song was fucking amazing. Like it'll be a new Prince song. And I'm like, that was fucking awesome. And I'm like, somewhere in the back of my brain, I was good enough to come up with some awesome song. And I do this a lot, you know, or I'll something really funny.
Or maybe it was horrible.
Well, no, check this out. Something really funny in a dream. I'll wake up laughing sometimes because something in a dream was so funny, but then I can't remember it. And probably about a year ago, I don't even remember who I was with in the dream, but people were talking shit and someone said an insult that was so funny that I woke up laughing and I was really tired. Yeah. And I always have a journal next to my bed to write in if I wake up with a good thought about a book or something. So I wrote down what it was that was so funny because it was fresh in my brain and I went back to sleep and then woke up, didn't remember it, nothing at all. And then I looked and I was like, oh shit, that's right. I woke up laughing at something that was so funny that it woke me up. And what woke me up, I had written down the words, sugary turned down Tommy wages.
That's so pretty funny.
Odds are those Prince songs fucking sucked.
That's right.
But the part of my brain that goes, that's really great, was like, so the part of my brain that's like, that's really funny. That's really funny. And it's like, that wasn't funny. It was fucking nonsense and it was stupid. So it's like, that really did a blow for my perceptions of reality.
Because I think I know what happens when you dream. I've read some stuff about it and your brain expands and it's basically like defragging. It's like the end of the day and it floods your brain, I think, with something called choline. It floods and basically it's like your brain's defragging. So it's grabbing all the things that may have happened through the day and things are out of place and it's getting like flushing it out because there's a bunch of leftover things of dopamine and stuff that need to be flushed out to start fresh the next day, basically to reboot. And then dreams end up being the artifact of those things happening together.
Yeah.
But when we think about perception, like you were saying, when you see something, it's like, do you see red? Would I see red? That whole argument. When you see something, this pen in my hand, I'm looking at it. It doesn't actually exist in the way that we think it exists. You know what I mean? Like I see a pink highlighter, but it doesn't exist as we think. My eyes interpret the reflection of light as a color pink. My hands represent a tactile sensation of the size and representation of this pin. But that's just my faculties and my senses that are built into what I can do. A cat or a dog or someone's going to see this different. You may see it a completely different color and consider it as such.
I see it as a whiskey flask.
It is a small whiskey flask after my modification.
Well, and going into that, like – I want to, and we're talking about physical things, and I think that simulation theory, nothing is really physical. It's a computer code. Like, we're stuck in, it's not the Matrix though. Like, people get it confused, like, oh, we live in the Matrix. Like, that's not necessarily what it is.
I'm not far from the Matrix, but I don't think our body is actually hosted somewhere in a pod.
Exactly.
I think we're literally like a program. Yeah. We're digitized.
Right. Well, I mean, there's three variations of a simulation. One is going to be a brain computer interface like the Matrix. Your body really Avatar. Exists somewhere, but it's plugged in and a computer is artificially feeding you sensory data.
Right.
That would be the one. The other one would be a more horrifying option, which would just be a brain in a jar where your brain.
Yeah, that would be a lot of us
really
in jars though. Like,
right.
I mean, sure. Every time a baby's okay. born, the brain's taken.
Yep.
Like,
yeah, it doesn't seem,
well, no, but it's a, yeah. it's a possibility.
Right.
If the brain exists and it's plugging into a computer, there's no reason that it has to be in a body.
Though. Like, that's weird.
Possible.
Like,
I mean, it's as possible as
it
the brain being
kept, efficient,
the body
it
being
seems volatile. I agree. It's a possibility.
And then the third one is just pure simulation where we don't have a physical brain. But again,
that's the thing. I'm not trying to get Morpheus on everybody, but there's the whole what is real. And what I was getting to with the pin is just, it's just signals in our brain that are translated to represent what this is.
Exactly.
So when you're in something like on the Matrix, when they're in the construct room or whatever, and they're touching the chair and the TV and Neo's walking around saying, this isn't real, talking about breathing the air that you breathe. If you can simulate those things in your brain, and that's why something seemed funny in your dream, those words meant nothing. But if it triggered the funny mechanism to relate this to funny, because what is funny? Like, we've been trained and adapted to, this little thing goes off when your funny sensor hits because you think something's funny. And that's why people have different sense of humor, a different favorite food, a different favorite color, because we all interpret those things different, and it triggers that for us in different ways. So I think we're probably just sentient virtualizations that are self-aware, and I feel like in my version of it that we do just have freedom of choice. It's like set it and forget it,
well,
and they're letting us go.
This is one thing that kind of threw me off of it because I was looking at the parallel universes type deal where we're actual physical beings, but the universe just kind of never stops and everything will eventually repeat itself, right? So there is another Earth. There is another me, you, whatever. There's all kinds of crazy things. It's just infinite and it never stops. So ultimately they talk about the pattern repeating itself and it has to, but everything is so far away. It's so vast that we will never see it.
And that's what they call a type one multiverse. The idea is that there would be multiple. So, there's
a never ending.
Right.
The
way I read it, because I read that and I was like, I don't know if I buy this. So the idea is if the universe is infinite space, or at least large enough that we could just call it infinite. Like, there's obviously a finite,
what we know,
but who gives a shit? It's so huge. It's inconceivable.
Pretty much never stops.
Right.
Yeah.
So the idea is that just mathematically speaking, the pattern will repeat itself, right? So somewhere, mathematically, statistically speaking, somewhere else in this universe, matter happens to coalesce the same exact way it happened here.
Yeah.
And everything evolved the same exact way it did here. So there was another me saying the same just by pure statistics. And I kind of called bullshit on that. But then when I really looked at it, they said if you have four dots – and one of them is red and three of them are white. All you can mix
only
between
so
red and white
patterns.
Dots. Exactly. So you lay them all out and you only get so many patterns
before you repeat.
This one is red and those three are, et cetera.
Right.
So this is just a very large extrapolation of that same thing. If I'm dealing with an infinite space of the universe, then I'm dealing with infinite combinations, not just four colored dots.
And that's a good example. And the one I call bullshit on is kind of, it's that same way there's an infinite number of yous that there is. Every time you make a choice, you're split off into another being, pretty much. So there's the you that accepted the one choice and went with it, but then there's also another you who walked across the street and got hit by a car, and then there's another you who went the other way, and you all live these separate lives, and it just keeps going and going and going with every choice that everybody makes all the time.
See, I have an easier time with that one. They call that one a type three multiverse. Yeah. And I only know this because I can understand the type one and I understand the type 3, diabetes, but the type 2 is complete fucking type quantum physics, man. Yeah, type 2 diabetes.
My problem with that, with the multiverse, is this. I will wrap my head and accept the multiverse, but I accept the multiverse in a virtualized environment because infinite universes.
That's where this leads into, is that you know, they have all these multiverse, hypothesis and, you know, all these different views and angles of the multiverse. But ultimately, we could end up being just computer source code. Well, you know,
what I was saying is, like, it's not efficient. Like, things take the path of least resistance. Yeah. Things settle to an equilibrium. Yeah. So the problem with an infinite universe is it requires infinite resources.
Yeah, but they're saying that they have a computer. I mean, if it is on a computer scale, like it is a program and it's just massively computing these different outcomes and different things, that the computer is so big and has pretty much limitless resources. You know what I mean? If we can accept that there is a multiverse, or that we are a simulation, in fact, that you have to accept, almost like in religion, you have to accept that there's a God. Well, that you have to accept that there's a computer with the most amazing amount of resources,
and it
you know,
could be
that
because
you can imagine.
It's quantumly computing. It's not even using a computer in its traditional sense.
No, exactly.
It's binarily charging particles if particles exist in the real universe, though. So there's still, I agree that there's probably some base reality universe, but it just makes more sense, like I was saying with Jupiter earlier, to make a virtual universe that fits in this small defined parameter, and it's not limitless, and it's probably why.
Well, the thing is, it doesn't matter what makes sense. The fact of the matter is, somewhere there would. And the other the thing that really gets to me about the simulation thing is that the real universe doesn't have to be anything like this one.
No,
there doesn't have to be gravity. There doesn't have to be electricity. There doesn't have to be time.
We would have superpowers and stuff.
Anything. Like, it could be this fucking incomprehensible
thing. That's the other thing, though.
But an intelligence manifested, and it was like, you know what? What would the universe be like if we had something called time, and we could only perceive in this many dimensions? Let's run that simulation.
The
real universe is like this vastly incomprehensible thing, and we're just this limited
simulation. With the simulation, though, we could just be in one program. There might be another one where, you know, the world is a hell.
Why wouldn't
there be? And everybody's just all war all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, just like we have all of our video games. You know, I mean, it could be something to that extent.
There could be a whole goat simulator universe. Totally. Yes. And the problem with this whole thing is, no matter what we figure out, even if we go, yep, we figured it out, we are in a simulation.
And there's no way to prove it. We're in the simulation.
There's some stuff that they've done that can pretty much prove that materialism doesn't exist, that we are in some type of virtualized construct. They came up with a new version of the double slit experiment, which I'll try to explain. It's super confusing to me, but I kind of understand the concept of it. But the problem is, we're no closer to the answer, because ultimately, outside of the virtualization, guess what? There's still some crazy Dave universe, a jar of magic potatoes that's doing whatever the hell it's doing. And we'll never know, because where did that one come from?
And the thing is, even with the simulation, if we are in a simulated universe, Nick Bostrom, one of the guys who spent a lot of brain power on it. I mean, his stance on it is that...
It's just his opinion.
Well, it's just his opinion, but his stance is if we are in a simulation, and people say, will we eventually be able to detect it? And his response is, no, we fucking wouldn't, because we aren't super intelligences,
right?
And that's who would be running the simulation. And the only if the super intelligence is sophisticated enough to run this as a simulation, they understand our limits as simulated beings and wouldn't allow us to see behind. I mean, a fucking character in Minecraft isn't suddenly going to go, oh shit, there's someone on the other side of the universe on an Xbox. Like, there's no
unless
way you don't know what's out there.
I don't know. If you put into the Minecraft character the power to increase its intelligence, it might actually happen. That could happen.
Well, there's a couple of things that kind of stump me, though. And I don't know that we can figure them out or come to a base or an agreement. But one of the things,
90% of this shit stumps me.
Well, so yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, there's some things that you can wrap your head around, though. There's some things that you're like, yeah, that could be a possibility. And it's whether if you want to believe it or not. But one of the biggest things that kind of holds me up with the simulation theory, and even like the multiverse thing, I guess this could happen, but because there's just different yous running around. But as far as the simulation theory, we're in a program, we're sitting here, we're doing a podcast, I stab myself right now and I kill myself in front of you. Like, mm-hmm. how is that a simulation? Like, there would be, I don't know, like, you, like, how is that involved in a simulation? Like, there would be no death.
Or no, would if there? You're a game, like, character, man. I mean, that's it. The Sims, someone dies.
That's
in
the thing.
Game.
I mean, if you have the Sims running on a computer and there's a Sims family doing their business and you go out to dinner and come back and your computer's on, one of the Sims is dead floating in the pool. Who the fuck knows what they did? I mean, it happens all the time. And suddenly these two are pregnant because you walked out of the room for an hour. I mean, weird things happen in The Sims that you weren't expecting, you know, as a part of. And even, like, I know there's the game isn't out yet, but there's a game called No Man's Sky, which has sort of been vaporware for a couple of years, but is supposedly coming out in the next year or so. And the reason No Man's Sky is unique is because you end up in a spaceship, you fly around in space, etc., and it's creating, the program is constantly creating a universe. So if I get in my ship and jump to coordinates, a star I can see that no one's been in, nothing is there, the computer hasn't bothered. But as soon as you drop out of hyperspace and you see that star system, it creates the star system for the first time.
Right.
And now it's locked in. So now that it's created it, I can fly down, land on the planet, and this game is incomprehensible to me. Because when I get to that planet, there are randomly evolved creatures that the system has an algorithm to spawn and evolve and create. There are minerals. They have their own periodic table in there. So there's minerals that you can mine, resources, moons, no moons, different types of atmosphere. But there's no one controlling it. It's just once you land, the algorithm runs, bam, now there's a planet, there's a creature, there's whatever, and it's locked in. And if anybody else ever flies there, it's permanently locked in. Yeah. So you can name the planet.
Well,
you
this
can
is- name
the, so it's like even when you think about the computation needed, it's like, oh, well, a lot of people say, well, there would be too much in the universe to run a simulation. Well, it's like you don't fucking need to. None of us have left Earth yet. The rest of it can all be bullshit. Once we get in the ship and jump to that other planet, then the software has to go, oh, fuck, I guess I got to generate this planet now.
Yeah.
But so, you know, in that's the meantime, exactly, that's it's it. I mean, that's the birth of something like that. You know what I mean? So it's on demand reality. It only needs to be there when someone looks for it, when someone checks in on it.
Much otherwise, like real reality.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be there.
You know, is it a wave or a particle? It's neither in both until you look at it and then it defines itself.
So I would like to just bring up, like, so Einstein in like 1905, he's a patent clerk in his spare time. Yeah. He writes like groundbreaking papers, four papers. He defines that light is made of photons, like Brad said earlier. He proves it that atoms exist and that they're measurable in what size they are. He did E equals MC squared and the theory of relativity. And then for 30 years, he's completely stumped on trying to unify the theory.
Right.
One of the smartest people that ever lived, maybe he's barking up the wrong tree. Maybe it wasn't right is why he couldn't prove it. And so there was someone, Bohr, I think, and he argued about quantum entanglement and about the fact that this could happen. And so that's where the double slit experiment comes in that Brad talked about early. And there are varying versions that have evolved of the double slit experiment. For those that don't know, watch YouTube. It's interesting. But basically, electrons or particles get fired through a single slit and they show up on like a photoreactive paper or something in the back. And it comes up in a clump, as you would expect, because you're shooting particles through. They put two slits in, they fire particles through. As long as they don't measure or observe the experiment, they perform the experiment, wait, and go look for the results at the end. If the particles go through two slits, it creates a wave pattern, so multiple lines come across the back of it. What happened was they went to go measure it as it went through, and all of a sudden there were two clump patterns. So as soon as, like Dave said, you observe it, changed. So what they proved by that, and I'll talk about the other one, is that there are not particles, but waves of potentiality is what they call it, like a probability wave.
And that's what's hard to
front. It's waiting to become.
Yeah, and that's what's hard to wrap your mind around. Like,
I don't think so, though.
It challenges, well, it does. It challenges everything you believe and what you know.
And that's what I said earlier.
You know what I mean?
Just get rid of materialism and accept it as a video game and just think of it as programming.
Yeah.
Like how we look, you know, this is interpreted as, you know, 2D information becomes a three-dimensional object because my brain converts it to such.
And it's really, really hard to do because it's the same thing with religion. Well, you have to give up what you think or know.
and just go for it. Think about it. So the next one they did, they were like, okay, well, something's happening. The electrons are bouncing off each other when they go through the two slits or something. So they shot one particle at a time, one after another, slowly. So there's no way they're hitting anything. In the same thing.
See, the stuff is so hard to understand because what is it exactly that they're shooting? A particle?
They're shooting an electron. So they're shooting an electron through a hole in a material.
Like, how are they getting a hold of an electron? You know what I mean? Like, these are like...
Well, you have to assume that technology. They know how to shoot electrons.
Right.
Yeah. We just know that it's like, you're not asking how...
Well, that's a lot of it. I mean, a lot of the quantum physics, it's like they do these ridiculously sophisticated experiments that we can barely wrap our mind around. Yeah. How the fuck did you do that in the first place? But that's they're consistently insane. Doing them, and they're repeatable, observable things that can be done all around the world.
Well, there were some arguments about how the experiment was performed. So another scientist came out with a different version of the double slit experiment. It was called the delayed observation or delayed something. I think it's delayed observation. So basically what would happen is it was unknown as to whether a measurement or an observation would occur once it had already passed through the slit. So they would fire an electron and there either would or would not be. It was unknown to them whether a measurement would take place. But when the measurement took place, it still happened that it switched back to a clump pattern because it was being observed. So their waves, if they're left alone, as soon as they're observed, they become particles. And like Dave said, the crazier part is they don't only become particles, they were always particles.
Right.
So
that's what fucks me up.
Yeah, the wave.
So both.
How do they know if they don't observe them that they were waves? Because that they stayed in particles.
Like spray paint.
If they're always particles, then it's a particle.
So because of the way it clumped on the pattern, like have you watched like the animation?
I haven't seen it.
Well, there's slits and you'll know it's like it's two lines or it's multiple lines in a wave.
So the line is the wave.
Same exact experiment. Yeah. The only difference changes is they observe the experiment. So then finally a scientist came up with a proposal for a super complex experiment, but we didn't even have the technology to do it. So then it took till like 1984 or something and a group of scientists were able to do it. And this one's super crazy. They shot the pairs through a splitter that would split entangled pairs. It would take an entangled pair of electrons that should stay together as a pair and split them off into two different paths. Mm-hmm. They could hit, one of them always went to a certain detector, so they knew where that one was going to go. The other one would hit a lens that had a 50% silvered surface that has a success rate of passing through or reflecting of 50%. So there was a 50-50 chance it was going to make it through and go to the next one to bounce through that detector, or it may bounce off and go to this detector. So by bouncing these things around, they were able to do what's called the quantum eraser experiment. So there were two detectors that the particles could arrive at that there was zero way to tell where the particles had originated at. So there was no way to observe those particles. So all of the ones that landed on those detectors and then finally passed through the last ended up being a waveform because you couldn't observe it. You had no way of telling if it had passed through, because there's no way of telling if it originated through both slots or one slot because there was a 50-50 chance that it had bounced through multiples of those. But when it arrived, the crazy part is the one that went to the first one behaved in the manner – it knew where the second particle would land because it behaved in the manner of the other particle. It behaved as a particle or a wave based on where the other one would land before it landed. So the act of observing it determined the past of it. Yeah. So the same guy put up I don't know if they actually did this or a thought experiment and said, well, if that's true, these are photons and electrons that they're using. They even do it with bacteria and like some small particles that are visible to the human eye now. But they said, look at a star billions of light years away. So now do that same experiment, but observe it. So the light waves become particles. So the fact that a scientist tries to observe a star billions of light years away all of a sudden changed the behavior of the light particles billions of light years ago.
Right.
Which is, I'm not saying I'm wrapping my head around that. That's like, holy crap. So that's called non-locality.
It basically changed the past to be able to shine the light.
So what it means is
right.
That's insane.
The particles, all time frames are available on demand. So it's like that there is no time, that's our perception of time.
Yeah. Well, we created time.
Yes.
And so it doesn't apply to anything else but us.
So when that light was originally generated from a star,
it was when the first person
100 million years ago, and that one happened to be observed, it already knew 100 million years ago whether it was a wave or a particle.
So switch to video game mode, where your game goes to the star, to that part of the universe that didn't exist yet.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
We didn't go there. It didn't matter. A billion light years didn't pass. It didn't have to generate it.
Just generated it.
We went ahead and observed it and checked in on it, and it generated a particle.
Right.
Otherwise, if we hadn't checked in on it, it was just throwing waves at us. But as soon as we checked in on it, it was like, oh, you know, everyone to stage, this, costumes on, like, boom.
This goes to the saying, you know, if a tree falls in the forest, you know, doesn't make a noise, you know, like that does it. You know, so, I would assume, yes, it does, because it's there. That's if you're thinking reality.
Or no, it doesn't, because no one
can hear it.
But it always either did or didn't, and
So that would kind of go into that same thing. If there's a squirrel there, it generates the sound because the squirrel's there observing it.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
It's literally this.
It cracks me up. It's Mystery Man. It's, I'm only invisible when no one's looking.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? Which I do to my son all the time.
Yeah.
I'm only invisible when you're not looking. He's like, no, you didn't see me looking. I was like, you were looking, though.
Yeah.
It's the same exact thing.
Right.
Well, and to somebody's reality, you're there because you're observing other things, but you're gone out of their sight. They can't see you. You know what I mean? Like,
so the Einstein-Bohr thing, though, once this happened later after Einstein was gone, that proved that...
What do you mean gone? You, like, struggled. You were going to say dead, and then you, like, struggled with it. Do you know something I don't know?
Well...
Like, you were, like, you started to say dead, and you were, like,
he's on level two. He's on level two.
Is he on the... Is he on level. Tupac Island?
He's in a minus world.
At the morgue.
He's in minus world from Mario level. Okay. Level minus one. He's just endlessly swimming.
Well, so Einstein's gone.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'll try if I can remember where I was at now.
Sorry.
Einstein tried 30 years of his career and didn't get anywhere. And he didn't actually believe the quantum entanglement theory. But the quantum entanglement theory is basically saying that a particle in the universe, the state of this particle, can affect the state of another particle regardless of the distance between them.
Yeah.
And that's called, once again, non-locality. And the way that I think about that in my head is Dropbox. So – this can affect that, right? So you change something here, and a central source changes it there.
So the cloud, basically,
right.
how we're using it.
So that makes
sense. Change something on your computer, it changes the file that's
changes
on the cloud.
It there immediately.
Yeah.
And that could be in China versus the United States. And we're just talking about scalability.
Yeah.
So the only thing that explains that is not that that particle bounced off of an electron that hit a proton, that hit a neutron, that hit a molecule, that moved through air, that made it out of our atmosphere, that traveled billions of light years and made a domino effect and hit that other particle over there. That doesn't make sense because that requires locality. I mean, there's physical atoms bombarding each other in dominoes and hitting that. But changing this here and changing it there at the same time, the only way that can do that is if they're equal distance from the central source, being like the computer, changing them at the same time. So it knows that this changed here, so that's got to change there. You know what I mean?
So, I mean, that's based on a computer reality if we are, in fact, a simulation.
It makes more sense than anything.
Yeah, but what about, like, the multiverse, though, where it's just, you know, there's a multiverse, there's a Big Bang, and we're in this thing where it's the Big Bang happened, and they're thinking it happened a trillionth of a trillionth of a trillionth of a trillionth of a second. You know what I mean?
Big Bang on Nintendo is power.
Well,
Mario on.
To
him,
everything, you're thinking it.
Yeah. Everything came from nothing immediately when you turned on Sims.
Yeah,
when you clicked that Sims icon, it came on from nothing.
If we are, in fact, reality, though, not a computer game, if we are in a multiverse, we are real, these things are here, a physical sense. You know,
I doubt we're the real one, though, because if there is multiverses, there's thousands of multiverses to the one real, because it's much easier resource wise to make.
No, that's what I'm saying. No, we would be in the multiverse. We're real. We're just so small, or whatever it is.
Well, multiverse can exist, but in a virtualized environment, it's still the same.
It doesn't have to be virtualized, though. It could be in a reality. It could be something.
It can. I mean, it could be anything.
That's the thing. Like
spaghetti and goats running around.
Well, and we objectify everything because that's the only thing we know. Like you say spaghetti and goats because we know spaghetti and goats, but that doesn't mean that that's really what's out there. You know, like we see a face on Mars or the man on the moon because that's what we recognize by feature.
No, we have a limited set of faculties
and
senses, and we're based on all of our reality on
so
that.
So I have an interesting disease. I don't know if you guys read anything about it, but it's the...
retardism. That's what he has.
synesthesia or synesthesia? Yeah.
I got a whole that was my next thing. Go okay. for it, sir.
So, no, synesthesia. Synesthesia. Yeah, yes. Sorry, I can't read right now. I never can.
I can read to 60 pages and it's over. We're coming up on it.
Dick. No, but I found that really, really interesting about what is reality. And reality is objectified by our own body.
I'm so glad you brought it up, yeah.
Yeah,
so
because...
Break down exactly what it is, though, for listeners.
Synesthesia is where people see music, they hear scent, and they smell numbers.
Right.
I mean, in a simple terms. That sounds nuts. Like, that sounds crazy. And I got onto that by how we see things with the light and how it's made up in our head. And our brain is what processes all these things. But what's to say? And it's the same argument as, you know, well, I'm looking at blue. That's been blue all my life. To you, it's really pink to me, but it's blue. You know what I mean? Like, you call pink blue.
There's
you know,
a guy, I forget his name off the top of my head, but there's a British person who is a cyborg. And he's the first person in the history of the UK who actually has like their official passport and driver's license, including computerized
in
technology.
Klingon.
Right.
In Klingon.
Yeah.
Because it's part of his being. Fuck. But he's colorblind and he has this crazy device that's hardwired into his neural network, into his body.
We talked about this, didn't we?
Yeah.
To do with the dick,
yeah,
the dick
exactly.
off his head.
And it picks up colors. And it's translates back. Them to sound, if I remember right. So he yes. when he's looking yeah. at something, he hears yellow and he hears blue
yeah.
and he hears
yeah.
red. And it took his brain not that long to adjust to it and figure
yeah.
it out. But now that's exactly what that is. He hears colors
yeah.
that his eyes can't
see. Yeah,
and
we talked about him on our cyborgs episode.
Yeah. yeah.
I forget
yeah,
what else
yeah,
we
he basically
about
hacked synesthesia into himself. So yes. There's some people that have some amazing abilities because of that too, like memory abilities and abilities to learn languages and things because they have the advantage of association. Like I might be able to remember that your name is Dave because every time I see you, I say Wendy's Dave, and I'm like Dave Wendy's, Wendy's from Dave, and I can remember your name's Dave now. You know,
that's really weird.
Well, professionals use that. Like
I'm a professional.
They I'm talking about people like Bill
Brad's handsome, Bradley Cooper, Brad handsome, Bradley Cooper, Brad. I got
yeah,
it.
It's a thing like Bill Clinton. That's what he would do. He remembers everybody in a room the first time he meets them, and then he'll see you.
That's a mnemonic.
A year
right?
later,
is mnemonic. Is that what that
yeah.
is?
Yeah. yeah, see you a year later, and hey, be like, hey, how you doing, Dave? You know, and shake your hand. You work at you know where this place, right?
That creeps me out.
That's
you never
crazy.
Did that before? I used to do that at tacos when we had the taco shop and blow people's mind because I can remember groups of like 15 people because I'd be like, I don't know.
And I think it takes
Elizabeth,
a certain type
Queen
of person
Elizabeth.
Too.
Yeah,
Wesley,
I think it's because when I get yeah. home, I want to remember eccentric. As little about the human world as possible. So when I get home, my brain kind of does a data purge and it was like, wait, you met three people today. What were their names? I remember them now, but make
know.
Sure you replace that. Yeah. Replace that data. Fuck those people. Don't remember their names.
On synesthesia, I'll just read it because I can't say it as well as I wrote it probably, and I don't remember it that fluently. But individuals with this condition experience a mix of audiovisual sensations when observing the world. That sounds like blue, or the number 5 is similar to orange. Imagine listening to a song or watching a concert from that perspective. So if a person with synesthesia hears a sound or an audible note and it represents a coloration for them,
they're watching this crazy LSD trip,
right?
Of rainbows.
It exists, though. That's they're not seeing things.
Yeah,
we're just
there.
Not used to that. If that was the norm, we would just be deaf, basically, you know, or blind. We would be missing that combining of things of the ability to see color when we hear.
Right.
If everyone on the earth had that, they're not crazy. They're not seeing things. They just have an inherent ability to do something cooler than we do. They have another sense. Almost like a sixth sense by combining those senses. So
they see ghosts.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Like they're seeing something like to us that's not there. I don't know. Are they seeing things?
I don't. That's what I don't get because like it says they smell numbers.
I don't think
that they're all the
well,
same.
I think the
I think
fact of the matter
people
is
people are different, right?
Well, yeah, but they. I mean, they have the same sensory input. I mean, they have the same sense organs that the rest of us has. Maybe they're mm-hmm. slightly enhanced or diminished in some way.
I think it's the way that their brain processes
exactly.
it,
it's
though,
a, it's
right?
a, to me, it's got to be a matter of software, not hardware. It's just a matter of – I mean, they've got the same hardware. They've got eyes. They've got ears. They've got skin. They've got all the rest of it. But somehow their brain is interpreting
it's
it in a radically
funny.
Different way.
Yeah.
But it might be an advantage if you heard a noise.
Absolutely.
You like
or a distraction. I mean, you'd be like,
oh, yeah.
all I'm doing is watching crazy colors all over. Because I'm like walking down the street and there's buses and dogs barking, people talking, and I'm like, you know, how does that? I don't know. I've never met anybody or
they can't
know,
watch Seinfeld. Yeah, it's just a calamity of orange and red. Like, I hate this.
But I would imagine that. I mean, I would imagine that your brain would adapt to it rather quickly, like brains do with all sorts of crazy experiments. You know,
well, you would pick up on things. Like, you're like, oh, that's an A sharp. Like you're looking over there, and it's like, oh, because you saw this hue of green or something.
Right.
It's super cool. Like,
I don't think it would be a distraction because I think you would.
It'd just be.
I mean, it would be no more. It would be no more. I mean, if you were blind for your entire life and suddenly your sight was restored for quite a while, that would be a distraction because suddenly, holy shit. Yeah. I'm trying to process all this extra data. Your brain would adapt, and you would just be a you know. So all of a sudden,
if you were born with it, it's you like would I have mean, all the again
going back to the cyborg thing. It's like people who have you know chips in their body so they can feel magnetic waves and they can tell whether or not they're facing north.
Yeah,
that's a new sense that they've given themselves, and their brain instantly adapts to it and can orient them to north instantly. Yeah. Right? I mean, a lot of animals do that. But you would suddenly have that ability and it would change things.
I guess my point with it was just the perception of it. Like,
right. The perception is very important.
It's just how you determine the input. So it's just programming. You know what I mean? Once again, like we just define these parameters and we create that object based off of the senses that we have. So it just more enforces to me that it's possible.
Oh yeah. And it almost seems like it's complicating things. Like why can't these things just be here?
I don't know, man. Like magic like, is just a cop out, everybody God just made it. Like well, that's just cause you don't know.
Yeah. And I mean, we're
at least
just,
this is
but
defining.
The other thing is though, like you're okay. It's a simulation theory. We're in a computer program. We still die. Like you're still going to die. Like you already know that.
But maybe you go to level two. You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. Maybe there is a heaven because of that. Maybe you go through and spawn. Like you die and you're like, spawn.
But well, then next it doesn't time. Like, matter though. Like then it doesn't matter.
Like next time you'll get a
nothing
college
matters.
Degree. Maybe next it's time. More efficient. Maybe it's, you know, this one simulation has spent all this time progressing. It has to die because that's part of the simulation. But I don't just want to delete that file. I should use it in the next simulation.
But
so maybe
here's
the character. You just bump up to the next simulation.
So that's where you feel like, oh, I used to be a samurai warrior. And
maybe,
now I'm stuck
because
here
you were.
In the
and then they recycled your code.
But look at this. Like maybe it hasn't taken that long. Like think about this for a second, like processing or outputting a video. Like you need to render a video to DVD. So you put in all these pictures and slides and whatnot and you need to render it. Well, it's an hour and a half video, but it took 2 minutes to render it to a file. So our virtualization might be 2 minutes of rendering and it's a lifetime for us or centuries for us.
Absolutely.
So we might experience it in real time because of the whole concept of time, but they might be getting tons of stuff done by generations after generations of simulation running to see what the outcome of these things are. We could be the reality show for some super race to see like what happened. They could be betting on us, like Dave's gonna mess up. You know,
but
what
the
mean?
Fact
that Brad's gonna say dick again.
Yep. The fact of the matter is there might not be time.
Right.
That could just be a parameter they added to this simulation to
so
fuck with us and see what it did. Yeah, we might be experiencing.
It's like when Superman's running like bullet speed through the city and everyone's moving in slow-mo. You know what I mean? They could just be rendering us out and zipping through the processing of this simulation. And to us, it's moving, you know, in our time.
I'm there's more confused now than ever.
There's a sci-fi book. It's actually a really old sci-fi book. I think
it's called Chama, New Mexico. It's great.
That is.
It gets a little rough around page 60.
No, there's a sci-fi book. Really fucking trippy. It was. It's called The Star Maker, and it came out in the 20s. I forget the guy's first name. His last name is Olafson. He was a philosopher and a sci-fi writer, and he writes this book, and the character ends up falling asleep on a hill and his consciousness leaves his body and starts drifting through the universe. And it does so for seemingly an eternity. And he drifts through space, goes to other planets that are habitable, and he starts seeing all this stuff and he sees things getting more and more sophisticated. And his goal is through all this endless expanse of time to meet the Star Maker, which is the being that is creating the universe and all the things. And he runs into these other beings that have disembodied from their bodies and their races, and they're all trying to work together to meet this Star Maker, and he ultimately meets the Star Maker, and the Star Maker is basically talking about everything we're talking about right now. And they're like, so what's like, and he's like, yeah, you know, well, I kind of did this once before, but I kind of fucked things up and I didn't have this element of quantum physics in there, so it didn't work. And in that one, I didn't have time. In this one, I did have time. And in that one, you know, I kind of did this, and the other one, I did that. And I'm just trying to get one right. So, like, his whole thing was like, trust me, yours isn't right. I'm just trying to get one right. Yeah. So, you know, one day I will. Don't worry about it. Yeah. You know?
It's the architect from Matrix 3.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But like, the whole point is every universe is a real universe, but they're all thing, isolated, like, and they're all him trying to get it right, and he can't do it, and he's frustrated.
I think that's the main question for everybody is, I don't care what we're in, or if it's reality, or if, you know, whatever. I want to know what's on the other side of it. You know what I mean? Like, we can't even fathom that. You know, like, we can sit here and discuss all day whether we're simulated, whether things are material and it's just, you know, somebody made it, or it's the multiverse, or there's parallel universes where there's a billion of us out there and we're all doing the same things, making different decisions. But that still leaves to be answered what is on the other side.
Right.
Who is controlling?
Right. And how
big is that?
And where did that come from?
Who made them? Yeah. That goes even beyond that.
And how is Tupac involved?
And is he dead? We were in the reality that Tupac died. He's still making music out there. Somewhere. Yes.
In another
multiverse.
And the thing is, to me, it's like, we've got the simulated universe. We've got the alternate quantum universes, whether it's the fact that the universe is large, so it all repeats itself, whether it's the quantum, you know, and the quantum thing, one way that they look at it with the quantum multiple worlds theory is like, if you had a dice, if I had a six-sided dice and I rolled it, at the moment as it's leaving my hands, there is the potentiality of it being all six, right? So it gets into this whole quantum notion, the slit experiment. It's sort of all six and only one of the six until it lands on the table. There's actually the TV show Community, the sitcom, there's a really amazing episode where they're playing a game and they roll the dice and you see the reality as it progresses from all of the different sixes, and it's really fucking funny.
Huh.
But so that idea is that, you know, when we mentioned it earlier, but the idea that every single event and reaction spawns an infinite number of possibilities, so all these universes exist. And again, this is a theory that a lot of quantum physicists subscribe to, that a lot of quantum
people
physicists
believe it.
Yeah. They say the physics bears this out, that these alternate realities exist in a
it's
different
just one lands
state.
In this.
And there's and that's the level three quantum. Just for anyone who really wants to talk about other quantum levels, there is a level two quantum universe. And I did my best to understand it, and all I can say is that it has to do with post-inflation bubbles based on principles of cosmological inflation.
I like
that. So if you can wrap your head around that shit, there's another type. I don't fucking get it. But so no, that's the question that I start to come to, is whether it's a simulation, whether there's these alternate realities. To be honest, and maybe it's because I'm not a religious person, but if for some reason, man,
it doesn't even have to conflict.
It gives me comfort. Yeah. Like the fact, even if we aren't a simulation and there's these multiple quantum universes, I kind of sit there and think that means that on the scale of quantum universes, I'm doing just fine. There's a Dave
the reality that you're living is going to be over at some point or another. Like,
well,
it doesn't give me any.
But no, it's like, if I ever get down on my life, I can be like, well, at least I'm not that other fucking Dave.
Yeah.
Like that guy.
The Dave, like, with 12 kids.
Like,
I mean, that
guy,
guy's an ass.
You know? And granted, there's a Bill Gates billionaire Dave who I sort of, you know, am envious of. But it gives you sort of if there's a simulation, it's the closest I come to thinking that there is a God, because if this is a simulation, there is a superintelligence running the simulation. So by default, there is a being that created the universe.
Yeah.
I think if religious people are being honest, like, it doesn't actually matter, because it's what's real. Like, if there's a Jesus simulation that's correct and fine, you're right. There was a Jesus and he came and he died. And when you die, you get to see grandpa on level two.
Well,
right?
I don't get the religious.
Why are we
conflicts.
Only on level one?
Right.
I mean, well,
come on.
We're not ready for level two. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, it's like, I look at it, like, there's a whole
Who's
lot of
the
people.
Boss that we have to beat?
Bowser.
Quick answer.
There's a lot of people that are like, you know, well, no, evolution, you know, goes against whatever. And it's like, God couldn't have fucking come up with evolution. Like, yeah. Even, and if you're religious and it's like, well, I don't believe in the, you know, the this idea of simulation because of God. And it's like, what, God couldn't have created somebody who created a simulation?
It doesn't even conflict. Yeah.
It doesn't conflict at all to me. You know, yeah. I don't know.
I have to mention before we get too close to the end, James Gates. Did you guys read about that guy?
Yeah, I know the name, but I can't remember what I read about.
Well, he's the one that kind of did the whole simulation theory, he found the binary code in the sheets.
Yeah.
So how do you do that?
Well, he even couldn't explain it very well. And like my problem
if
with
if he
it,
found the fucking code, how can he not explain it very well? Is this the guy that works at
Fermilab?
He's a professor.
I followed him home one night, but he stopped at Burger King. I was late. I had to get milk. I quit following him.
What did he say?
So he even perplexed Neil deGrasse Tyson. Like, there's a cool interview on, and you can watch Neil deGrasse Tyson walking around trying to get his head around what the guy is saying. And so what he says is that he has found code, like actual binary code, in the equations that we use to describe the universe. And not even just code, a specific type of code that was invented by a guy named Claude Shannon in 1940. So clearly not invented, but discovered by, because it existed. I guess we don't invent anything because it sort of all exists there. But my problem, I think, with finding code in an equation that we use to describe the universe is we wrote the equation to describe what we think of the universe. So it is something that we made based off of math that we know.
Right.
And it seems to me there would be a numerical patternicity to that, right?
I mean,
like,
it would be like
we made an equation.
No, it would be like saying God exists because of pi, not like
I
apple
saw that,
pie.
Yeah, because
but I'm just like, no, that's the fucking number. That just happens to be the number when you're dealing with the circle. That's just a fucking constant. It's like I would think the same kind of thing about this. It's like if the code already existed,
it's a mathematical equation that is set up to make sense and come up with a result based off of a calculation. So it's like I made a birthday cake and we found evidence of flour. Is what I'm thinking. Like, yeah, no shit. It's a math equation. But I mean, I can't even begin to say it. They've been working on it for 2 years. And he said there's like one paper you could read. And there was no real way to explain it because there's no experiment yet or even a theory of an experiment to show. So I'm not really sure because he didn't even explain it.
Yeah, so
but that was my problem with it.
He has a PhD. Oh, he has a BS and a PhD from MIT.
Okay.
So, slacker. And then he's I guess it's supersymmetry is what it's called.
Okay.
That's what he's into. So
yeah, it's supersymmetric equations and quantum mechanics. But like
I said, and
he made that equation. Of course, there's a math pattern in it. Probably, you know what I mean. It feels like that's going to happen if you reverse engineer something backwards.
But my whole thing is like, how do you get a binary code out of an atom or wherever the fuck?
It's not out of the atom. It's out of the equation we use to describe the atom as a problem. But we made that, and that's my problem with it. But once again,
I'm
not that guy
obviously
on stage with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Right.
Well, so, we made everything that's here, we've made up something for.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like there's nothing all the way down to what's in an atom, which is – that's what really boggles me. Atoms are basically nothing. They're not made up of anything. They're 90% nothing.
Right. There's practically nothing. There's no reason I don't just fall through the fucking earth.
Yeah.
Because there isn't a physical thing touching a physical thing holding
me. And that further proves like a program type construct. Because so for one, like when you have a computer.
It doesn't necessarily prove that though.
I feel like it does because it – rather than the mysterious – thing that is, we know that there's that wave potentiality and we know that when we observe it, it becomes particles. So we know that the universe is finite in this theory and that there are measurable units. So just like computer programming is at its lowest level made up of ones and zeros, our environment and
is
universe
made up of that,
is made up of protons, neutrons,
well,
electrons,
quarks,
gluons.
You would have values basically. You know what I mean? Like
I'm just saying there's like calculable. Is that a word? Calculable?
Calculable? No.
Sure.
Is that a word?
Doing words like me, no.
No. That's a Brad word.
Calculatable.
We're gonna use it though.
It's a calculatable.
We are able to calculate mathematically in reverse something. Like we can deduce something
we
based
made
off
math,
of measured particles. I agree. But what I'm saying is like if something was destroyed, in theory, we could put it back together because all of the information is there. So it's a measurable thing. Like we can I'm having trouble getting my words across. I feel like James Gates right now. I'm just well, so far out there. It's yes, smarter than me.
Yes, we I can, understand. We can deduce us it. Down because we're here. Like, that doesn't explain why we're here or what made us. You know what no, I mean? Like,
and like having, I said in the beginning, having we might binary, get closer to our answer, but we won't know the answer.
Having binary in the code that determines what an atom is, of course it's there. You can make binary into anything. Everything's binary.
It's not even binary, though. It's some type of like browser-based
it's binary code. It's zeros and ones. It's binary code.
It's not what he found, though. He didn't find binary code. He found some type of
it's
code.
It's zeros and ones.
So my question is, Nick Bostrom said that he doesn't think that we could ever see through the simulation because the supercomputer would have made it so that we can't.
Yeah, it puts but a then, value. The, what but our
I
max. Just,
I have to wonder if things like, if we are in a simulation, are things like this guy discovering the binary code and us finally being able to use
checkpoint.
Electrons, like, did we, like...
Score.
Did whoever was doing the simulation be like, well, they're these fucking apes. They're never going to get smart enough to actually look at a fucking electron and figure out waveforms. Like, I'll just stop. Shit. We're just cut a, you know, like we're just going to cut a corner. We'll stop the simulation there because these fucking people are never going to get smart enough to do it. And then some point they look back at the screen and they're like, oh shit, these apes are kind of looking at us. Like, well, check it out. Well, they actually saw the code. Like, fuck, I did not expect
that's
that.
What I'm saying, where you're saying,
we
like,
should
Minecraft.
Go ahead and erase this simulation and start over. Ooh, so yeah. You guys better stop fucking looking yeah. Because eventually they're going to be like, oh, that's going to
be another
work.
Flood.
Let's make a better one. Yeah.
40 days of rain, motherfuckers. 40 nights of rain.
What do you think about Nick Bostrom saying that not two of those things could exist at once? I don't understand why one of the civilizations couldn't have reached technological advancement and created a virtualization well, where another one blew himself up.
I take
up.
That back. I don't know that he said none of them can. He just said that one of these propositions has to be true.
Right.
Yeah, at least
he doesn't,
one.
Right, yeah, it doesn't mean say that all of them multiples are. Can, but yeah. One of them has right. To be true.
Because I had a problem with that, him. But I was like, I'm,
no, I'm not and, sure. And, I don't and, know. Yeah. I would
the
have
other
to
thing
look
is,
at
too,
paper.
One of them doesn't have to be true. It could be something totally different.
Not according to him, one of them has to be true.
Well, I don't give a fuck what he says. I'm just saying, according to me, right. It doesn't have to be.
Right.
Well, you go tell him because so, man, you ain't never got a tool stuck down a hole, man, at like 2 miles down. You got to pull that sucker out. He don't know shit about that, man.
He doesn't.
Nope.
Nuh-uh.
Nope.
Mathematics.
Plus, there's a, pluses you know, like there's a fourth option where a super intelligent race becomes Jell-O pudding pops.
Totally.
He didn't put that on
there.
You
had to bring there. Cosby. Yeah. You had to bring Cosby
I
into
did.
This.
I did. I had to
a
bring
phallic
Cosby.
Cosby at that.
Man, how many Cosbys are out there right now raping women?
Infinite.
Oh my God.
Infinite.
Some of them
that's
made
insane.
It all the way through their career and never got found
that's
out.
That's true.
I want to live in that one.
Sadly, some of them never wore awesome sweaters in the 80s.
That's not possible.
They so no matter how many
that,
of the that, infinite Cosbys,
that's where I
they
draw
all wore horrible sweaters in the
that
80s.
That is a multi-universal constant.
That is that,
the
yep.
Cosby constant.
Yeah, yeah riddle yeah. Me that, Nick Bostrom.
Yeah, why
you never talked
every,
about a fucking
why
Cosby
in every
sweater.
Multiverse Cosby wears the same sweater?
I
tell
say
me
we,
that.
We should give an early cut of this to Reggie and just let him chime in over us on an extra track.
He's like, no, you guys
we'll
don't
do,
know.
Huh. We'll do a director's cut. And
that's an accurate.
Yeah.
He was across the street. We should have invited him. I don't like him. He has
right
long
now
hair.
He was? I yeah. Tried so yeah. Hard. I think maybe he didn't want to do it. I invited him, and he said, I got a lot of grading on Sunday. I said,
no,
hey,
he
guess
no,
what?
I,
you
no,
didn't
I
see him?
Through on Sunday.
No, no, Dave, no, Dave was talking to him, and then every time Dave's looked away, he
was he grading?
No, he like mimes to me. He's like, fuck you.
That mother.
That's what he says. Every time Dave looks away.
He was grading.
Yeah, he was.
He was grading.
Yeah, he was on his last paper, though. He didn't want to go on the show. He's like, nah, I'm busy. He had a stack of already graded papers, and then the one paper there, he's like, nah, I got to finish grading.
He just flipped them over and started
yeah.
Writing stories
nah,
on the
yeah,
back. Was, song lyrics.
Reggie is also Dr. Williams, who is a professor of philosophy. So we wanted to get him on so he could throw some philosophical tidbits at us. We'll get him on later. So if you didn't think this episode sounded enough like three people who are baked and are discussing the nature of the universe, we'll get him on, and then we'll have four people who sound baked and are discussing the nature of the universe.
I'm gonna get
and still come to no conclusion.
Right. Well, then what conclusion can
well,
we come to?
Well, we have to figure this shit out.
I'll tell you what. My conclusion, I can accept that I think
okay.
We're in a virtualized reality.
So
for
Brent,
me,
we
yes.
Are okay. So we're in a. So we are. Not in the Matrix, but in a virtualized reality, there is a computer program running somewhere that we are on.
I guess
I think.
I agree.
As much sense as anything else.
I'm going out and killing everybody.
I don't know. I think everyone should just go watch Monty Python's The Meaning of Life because I think they sum it up.
I have an Einstein quote for the end, though, because right before he died, this is what he said. So he said, I must confess that I was unable to find an explanation for the atomistic character of nature. One must find a way to avoid the space-time continuum altogether, though I haven't the slightest idea what kind of elementary concept would be used in such a theory. And that was in October of 1954. So he, the smartest man that we've had as of yet, you know, comparably to maybe a top 10, couldn't figure it out. And he said that you need to avoid the space-time continuum altogether. And for me, I think that means avoiding this, you know, atom-based reality and having that virtualized thing where you have some type of control.
I think he was a plant.
He was a plant?
I think he was here to government throw us informant? Off the trail from the architect.
Probably.
He got us right up to the fence, and then the architect talked to him and said, dude, if you keep digging, I'm going to fucking reset this thing. He was like, oh, shit. I couldn't figure it out. 30 years, got nothing.
He's all, and you have to wear your hair really crazy.
I thought you were going to say his most famous quote.
What's that?
Go for it.
Don't be a retard.